July 5th, 2001. Evening in the office. At her vast desk, Muriel moved through the papers which had awaited her all day. Her inside line rang. Her first thought was Talmadge, but the caller ID showed Larry's cell phone. "You're working late," she said. "No, you are. I'm at home, but I just thought of something, and I had a guess I'd find you there. I'm calling to tell on myself." "Have you been naughty, Larry?" "I've been a moron. I actually went to visit with Rocky Madafi at Gang Crimes this AM, he said. And I'm there telling him how I've got to find some gangbanger called the Pharaoh, and all of a sudden I see the light. Remember you told me to dig up the guy Erno shot at Ike's 4 years ago? Sure. Well, do you remember his name? Eventually, she said, Cole. What about his first name? She was blank. F-A-R-O, said Larry. She took a second to get it, and her initial reaction was skeptical. Well, there's a good way to find out if it's the same guy, Larry said. I mean, maybe there is. That's what I just thought of. For the hearing in front of Harlow, Larry and she had assembled a transfer case full of documents, which was now in the bay window behind Muriel's desk. Among the records was a photocopy of the address book which the evidence tech had found at Louisa's purse at Paradise a decade ago. Muriel pulled the phone down to the carpet beside her and talked to Larry as she thumbed through the papers until she found the copy. "No Pharaoh Cole," Muriel announced. "Check under ref," Larry asked finally. She hadn't. Pharaoh was written in pen in Louisa's precise hand, which looked as if it had been inscribed against a ruler. Cole had been added in pencil sometime later. Fuck, Larry said. Time out, Muriel said. She rewound and tried to go through it on her own. Erno shot Louisa's fence 6 years later? Is that a coincidence, or do we know there's a connection between Erda and him? When Erno was arrested at Ike's, Larry said, right after the shooting, Erno claimed Cole went off because Erdai had investigated him way back when for some kind of ticket fraud. Had to be referring to the scam Pharaoh had run with Louisa and Squirrel, right? Larry had been thinking about this all day and was way ahead of her. So is this good news or bad news? Christ, said Larry, it's got to be good. I say this boy Pharaoh's going to give you the movie version of the coming attractions we heard from Genevieve last week. It'll be Squirrel, the asshole murderer, and Technicolor. She thought it over, but Larry was making sense. The only hitch, she said, is I spent a good week pissing for shit and giggles looking for this Pharaoh. Near as I can tell, he flew up his own behind. These days, Pharaoh Cole appeared to be jobless or dead or using another name. The only thing I find from the case is Pharaoh's gun and the shirt they stripped off him in surgery. Still inventoried in evidence, actually. I thought if I send the pistol over to Mo Dickerman, it's possible he can pick up a print on it. Maybe with that, we find Pharaoh under another name. Dickerman was the chief fingerprint examiner and as good as anyone in the country. Muriel liked that idea. And if you want to pop for it out of the PA's budget, Larry said, we can do DNA on the blood on the shirt, too. See if he's in CODIS. CODIS stood for Combined DNA Index System, but that was a $5,000 long shot. Larry, however, wanted to pull out all the stops, and she didn't fight him. Happy? She asked. Larry hesitated. I'm still missing something, he said. Maybe you miss me, Larry. She found that line hilarious, but she didn't linger on the phone to see if he, too, was laughing. Arthur and Jillian were together whenever they were not at work. For Jillian, who had defied the inclination to cling even in junior high, the experience was otherworldly. Arthur stayed in the office until she was done at the store, then picked her up for dinner at 8 or 9. Usually she'd shopped at the gourmet counter at Morton's, and was waiting with a heavy shopping bag when Arthur's round sedan cruised to the curb. At his apartment, they made love and ate and made love again. Consuming physical passion had never really been part of any of her prior relationships. If she or Arthur had previously made the descent, they might have an idea how to rise up from time to time. But now they seemed melted together at the core of pleasure. I'm an addict, she said one night, and was immediately struck dumb by her carefree remark. There were a thousand thoughts she was unwilling to explore. Their languor was reinforced by Jillian's reluctance to carry their affair beyond Arthur's bedroom. It seemed impossible to her that their relationship could survive once they began to mix with others, once they inserted themselves in the context of history and expectations and endured judgment and gossip. Like some enchantment, what existed between them would perish in the light of day. Arthur, on the other hand, would have been just as happy to take out front-page advertisements announcing his dedication to her, and he was frequently frustrated by her unwillingness to venture out together, even to visit the homes of his high school and college friends who he insisted would be discreet and accepting. Jillian felt a pall encroaching. Even someone as perpetually hopeful as Arthur had to consider a peril that was obvious to a madwoman. That night, when they made love, there was an absence, still tender but more anchored here on Earth. Afterwards, as Jillian reached the bedside table for a cigarette, Arthur asked the question neither of them had ever ventured aloud. What do you think will happen with us? I think in time you'll move on, Arthur. Perhaps build on what you've learned about yourself with me and find someone your own age. Don't you want children? Most people do. Don't you? It's too late. That was the ultimate calamity of the penitentiary. It had taken the last of her childbearing years. Why is it too late? He demanded. The world is full of children who need someone to love them. Are you saying you'd never want to be a parent? It was inconceivable. Her own survival still required her full attention. It would be an enormous change, Arthur. But that's the point of life, isn't it? Changing. To be happier, more perfect. Look how much you've changed. You believe you've changed for the better, don't you? She had never thought of it that way. I really don't know, she said. I'd like to believe I have. Have you changed, Arthur? Are you kidding? This is the happiest I've ever been. I'd like to break into song. She groaned at the thought. Challenged, Arthur, round and short, stood up naked in the center of the bed and crooned, I dreamed of someone like you. You seem too marvelous for it to be true. The second line was like a stake through her heart. But he continued. At peak volume, he sang every line, every chorus, until Jillian, for the first time in years, had lost herself in laughter.